I'm Christine Carlson. Welcome to our virtual conference, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff for Moms. You know, nobody gets an instruction booklet on how to do this parenting thing, and let's face it, it gets really exhausting. Our intention for this series is to bring you experts who have sweat all the answers to the questions you have surrounding conscious parenting, self-care, how to balance being a woman with your role of being a mom, so that you can stress less and enjoy your family more. Isn't that a novel idea? Now, I know all of you are out buzzing around and you're managing so much, but I'd like to invite you to get a cup of tea, cup of coffee, glass of water, wherever you are, just sit and listen in complete presence. One of the things that I speak on most is accessing our peaceful sanctuary inside and finding your peaceful center so that no matter what chaos is going on around you, you can return to this place at any time. So let's take a moment, if you will, to just breathe. Take a deep breath in, and on the exhale, let go of all of your responsibilities, tension, and any fear or anxiety you might be holding onto in your body. Let go and bring your attention right here, right now. Everything you do in nourishing your spirit will spill over into your family life and affect your parenting in a positive way. This next hour will inspire you. You know, we have our kids from love, and yet it seems more difficult than ever after we have them to stay connected and in love while raising a family. It's so busy and it's so tiring. I know oftentimes my late husband and I would fall in bed at night and we would just look at each other and laugh because we were so exhausted. We'd be like, okay, time to go to sleep and get up and do it all over again. And yet there's still tremendous joy in parenting, but it is difficult to keep that loving connection alive. And my late husband, Richard, and I wrote a book called Don't Sweat the Small Stuff in Love. And I also wrote a chapter in Moms called Put Him First, Not Last on Your List. We kind of will be talking about what that's about in a minute here. Our dedication to our daughters in Don't Sweat the Small Stuff in Love was to Jazz and Kenna. The greatest gift we have to give you is the love we have for each other. And, you know, I also wrote a chapter in the mom's book about the gift of belonging. And the reason we'll be speaking on this today, I'm so happy to be talking to our wonderful guests today. They are two very special people, Ed and Betty Cota. They are dedicated to helping couples achieve romance, fulfillment, and happiness in their marriages. Married over 40 years, Ed and Betty's commitment to both their children and each other has stood the test of time. After 4 years of marriage, they welcomed the birth of their first child, wanting to be the very best parents that they could be. Then they began to enhance their couple's relationship by presenting as a team for couple for Worldwide Marriage Encounter. After having their sixth child, it became obvious that the skills they learned from Marriage Encounter needed a counterpart for their parenting. In 1984, they began taking Ho'ala Education Philosophy parenting classes, which created a thriving environment for their children's learning while creating unifying family values in their home. With six children and nine grandchildren, Ed and Betty have shown that love, communication, and patience are core ingredients for a happy marriage and successful parenting. Through both triumphs and tragedies, the Cotas have witnessed their marriage transform into one of genuine love, respect, and renewable passion. Today, four of their six children and two of their spouses work side by side with them in their financial planning business, their dream come true. Ed and Betty's inspirational words can help empower any couple to rekindle the romance and enhance it through what they have titled Couple First Parenting. They love to share their vast knowledge through retreats and enrichment experiences, especially Living in Love, in addition to webinars and presentations. The Cotas reside in Hawaii, where they enjoy the beach and spending time with their family and friends who strive for the same relationship values. Ed has also co-authored another best-selling book, Your Dream Machine, which is available as a media book on Amazon. You know, welcome, Ed and Betty. I'm so honored and so happy to be speaking with you today.
Thank you so much.
Christine, thank you so much.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, so for our listeners, we've got them both on the line here, and so we're going to have a triple call today. And I especially was eager to invite the CODAs on because they have what's very rare in today's world. They have a long and lasting love connection. And for those of you who are listening, you know, maybe you've been married a little while, maybe you've been married 7 to 10 years. But when you meet people like the CODAs and that have, you know, been married for 40 years and they still act like they're in love, you know that's a feat, right?
Exactly.
Because it is challenging, especially after raising a family. So let's get right into your personal journey. I like to start every call by really allowing our listeners to get to know you. So if you guys could just speak one at a time and share a little bit about your story, that would be awesome. You can take turns. That would be great. And we'd love to hear about you and your journey as a couple, married couple, and having your family.
Thank you, Christine. Well, as you said, the name of our book is Passionate Parent, Passionate Couple, and the subtitle is exactly what you're talking about because it's keeping the passion alive after the children arrive. And but actually Ed and I met in 1965. May 21st was our first real date, but we met at a backstop of a baseball game, and in the spring a man's fancy turns to romance and love, and that's what happened. The love bug bit us at a baseball game, and we've loved watching baseball ever since. And actually, one of our passions is sports, and that's one of the things that keeps our passion alive is our love of sports and being great fans. That's what we are.
And you guys
so
met
we
when you were how old?
We were actually dating for 4 years before we got married.
Oh, okay.
And then we were trying not to have children for a couple of years to really see what married life was like for us as a couple. And all that time of dating and before children was very huge in our background as we look back at it, because it really taught us that we could be friends, lovers, work through things, have some downs, actually split up in the middle of it and come back together and know that we could make something permanent happen. And then we tried to have a child for over a year and a half before we actually conceived our first child. And that really taught us the yearning and longing for people that are having trouble having children. And so it's been a great journey because within 10 years, all 6 children came into our life. And so they're very close and overwhelming with that many to deal with all at one time.
Oh, yeah, I'll bet. So tell me, initially, how did you guys, I mean, because you know there's that famous quote, and I don't know who said it, I wish I could remember. I think it was, I always say it's unknown. It's unknown if I don't know it. But there's
right.
That quote that says that, you know, I had 8 theories about raising children, then I had 8 children, and I had none.
Exactly. That was one of the funny experiences that we had because my sister was, her major was in child development, and she was just telling us what we should do with our children constantly until she had her own. And then she asked our forgiveness profusely.
Yeah, it's one of those gigs that it's definitely a parenting club. You can only belong after you have your kids.
Exactly, yes.
So tell me initially, how was it? I mean, did you feel like everything was pretty cool until you had like the third one, or how? Did you have any struggles in those early years?
The backbreaker was number 4. That's
oh, I
when
bet.
I stop sewing, actually stop being really the domestic goddess that I thought I was. number four was a backbreaker, and he was a delightful child. He never even went into his terrible twos. So it definitely wasn't his fault. It was just the number.
Yeah.
Then we found after four that sort of the older ones took care of the younger ones. And so that's how people say, I don't know how you did it. And that's how we did it. The older kids took care of the younger ones. And Ed and I just, well, that's when we said we really would work on our own relationship so much.
Well, and don't the older kids just love to help? I mean, isn't it our nature as people and children just love to help, but you have to kind of give them the opportunity to, right?
Right.
Exactly.
Well, if you talk to our oldest child, she doesn't think that we should have written this book on parenting. She says she raised our children.
So, and does she have children of her own now?
Yes, she does. She has two, and she's an excellent mother.
Oh, that's great.
Yes. We did train her well,
yes.
Whether she knows it or not.
Of course. Of course. We all see things from our own set of eyeglasses in reality, right? So so I'm wondering, like, I'd love for you to talk about some of the things that you talk about with couples and how they can keep their loving connection alive. But first I want to ask you, how important is it for the family, do you think, to keep your relationship connection strong and alive?
Well, you just look at the headlines today with the high-profile divorces, and, you know, ugly custody battles are just making so much of the news. Who's thinking about the children? I mean, this is so unbelievable. But early on in our marriage, some really close friends of ours that we thought would be like us together forever got divorced. And we saw the impact on their children. And we were like, oh my gosh, where are we going? What's going on with our relationship? Because truly, the best gift we can give our children is our strong relationship. We just kind of intuitively figured that out, that, you know, neither of us were unfortunate enough to come from separated parents. So we had a model of, you know, that permanence in marriage. And yet the way we were kind of going through life in the 60s and 70s wasn't really supporting that. There were just so much turmoil and so many distractions to our couple relationship. And when we started having children, that didn't help. It actually started putting more stress on our relationship. And so we decided we've got to change. We want our kids to have a loving couple as parents. And so we came up with a lot of different coined phrases, like the couple is the heart of the family, and things that kept us going, you know. So it was really a critical turnaround where we finally decided we have to put our relationship above the relationship we have with our children if we really want this to work. And it was really difficult in the beginning. It was like, wow, are we going to be considered bad parents? Are people going to judge us that, you know, we actually spend time in our room together with the kids locked out in a sense? I mean, it just things that we did to turn the tide and really live what we wanted for our family.
Well, and that is true. You know, sometimes people have been criticized for putting their relationship first because it hasn't been the model of what we, you know, what we've always said, that the kids come first. But if it's true that the kids should come first, then why are so many people losing their connection and getting divorced, you know? And that's what Richard and I said, too. We felt really strongly that we were the united front and that our kids were next to that because we were in love first. They came from our love, and we needed, if there wasn't a strong family unit in the home that started with us, then there wasn't going to be anything for them to belong to. And, you know, a lot of the struggles that you see today with teens and with kids, They feel isolated and lonely, and it's truly because their family unit isn't strong, and it often isn't strong because the parents have let their loving connection go. So I applaud you both for knowing that and for giving that gift to your children, and hopefully they're passing that on to their children.
That's what is so important. The kids need to see us modeling the good relationship. That means they see us fight. We fight in front of them, but they also see us make up, and they see us, you know, we don't run to the bedroom to make up. We want to make up, you know, have the full-on discussion in front of them so they know that people, you know, there's no such thing, like you said, as a perfect marriage. You know, it's something that we have to, you know, show them the whole gamut of, yes, we fight, we have discussions, we don't run away from each other, we stay with each other till we've worked it all out, and then we ask forgiveness, and we do the healing, everything, so they could see it happening. I mean, we didn't, like, sit them down and say, watch us fight or anything, but they were catching it in a natural way, not, you know, something that was phony or acted out for them, but they saw the real thing. And that was one of the ways that we modeled for them.
That's awesome. Yeah, I'd like to talk about that for a moment because I feel like there's a really healthy way to do conflict in front of kids,
mm-hmm.
and even in your marriage, just in general, whether your kids are present or not. And, you know, there's a way in which you can have conflict if you're in agreement with your partner about this that is loving, where the conflict actually, as you discuss what you're disagreeing about and you're listening to each other back and forth, then you are actually, what you're doing is reaching a deeper understanding, because no two people, no matter how close you are, see the world through the same set of lenses. Like, we all see the world through our own set of lenses, and sometimes those lenses don't match up. And whether it be, you know, the expectations you have about something or your parenting styles or all, and there's no way that any two people can discuss all the 10 million trillion things they need to in order to agree on everything. So that's, to me, what a healthy conflict looks like. And I think when people get into unhealthy fighting and where they're, you know, yelling and screaming and they've just lost their whole sense of heart, you know, that's probably not, I'm sure, very healthy to be in front of the kids. And it's not healthy when you're not with the kids, you know. It's just, that's like the time to step back, take, you know, 10 deep breaths or 10 minutes or an hour and walk away and come back, right?
Yes, absolutely. We had, you know, one of our things was to hold hands while fighting, so that we had to stay there and face each other. And of course, holding hands really puts a crimp on anything that would really get too far out of hand. But
you sure can't hit each other when you're holding each other's hands. That's for sure.
Right.
Exactly.
I'm kidding.
Even suggest you need to be naked while you're holding hands and fighting, but that might not be too cool in front of the kids.
No.
But that's really lovely, because that's a way that you can stay connected, and it's very difficult to be super angry or say really mean things when you're actually holding somebody's hand. I really like that. I really like that idea for our listeners, you know, to sit and hold hands when they're having a conflict, and make that the rule. You know, you kind of have to set the container for these things ahead of time. Like, at the time, it's not always the best, but if you have sort of guidelines in your relationship that you sort of follow, one of the techniques that Richard and I learned really early on in our marriage, more as an experiment than anything, because we kind of came on the cusp of that whole New Age movement and stuff, and so we were kind of really into the touchy-feely and tell each other everything, and so we would hold each other's we would hold a heart stone early in our marriage, and we would talk, we would say, we'd have these meetings once a week, and we would each one of us would have our turn to talk, like having a talking stick, but it was the heart stone we held. And we would share, you know, the things that bothered us, the things we were pleased about, you know, and the only rule was we couldn't interrupt each other. And we could respond to what was said on our turn, but we couldn't interrupt each other. We just had to listen. And then we would practice that technique of repeating back what we heard. And we, you know, we did this for a while, like a couple months, and then we just started giggling. I mean, we were like, there really wasn't much that was bothering us anymore. So,
right.
I always say that technique that we learned taught us how to talk to each other and listen. And I don't think we ever really interrupted each other after we practiced that for a few months in the rest of our marriage for 22 years. So, you know, we were really good about really listening. And I always tell couples, too, and you're going to understand this, that when you're in a conflict, the most important thing, I think, is to listen to the feeling of what somebody's saying, not so much the content. Do you find that to be true with you, the two of you as well?
That is so absolutely one of the huge changes that I made, especially in my parenting style, was starting to really understand and sit long enough to get in touch with feelings. Because, you know, Betty and I could be sitting out on the North Shore watching a gorgeous sunset. And a lot of couples do this where they say, oh, we were just united feeling the same thing. And yet, if you look deep inside, that sunset may have given me the exhilaration of feeling close to God, but she could be sitting there being reminded of the death of her dad and feeling melancholy and you know, just totally different than you would expect. And unless you share the feelings, you don't know the person. And especially when it came to our kids, you know, they do everything to push the button to get your feelings going when they want attention, positive or negative. And once I started to understand that if a kid said, you're the worst parent in the world, they didn't know how to express that they're feeling anger and frustration and hurt. They just say the words in a way to make that feeling come back at you. And when I could sit there and say, you know, Kelly, I can see that you're really hurt and angry right now. I can really understand that frustration. I know I've felt it before myself. Instead of, you have to respect me. I deserve respect because I'm the parent. I mean, that's just transformational to get in touch with feelings. And the only way we were able to do that is for Betty and me, literally every day, we write a love letter to each other. And in that letter, we express feelings about a topic. Now, we don't do it for a long time, but 20 minutes. And we practiced expressing our feelings with each other so that we could then do that with our kids.
Now, that's really cute. So how many years
right
have
now.
You been doing those love letters?
Well, that was a technique that we learned in Marriage Encounter, and we went to our Marriage Encounter weekend in 1976. And then off and on, we have written these love letters. Like right now, we're doing it every day actually for Lent. We're making our relationship number one for Lent. And every day we write on a question, like Eddie said, we write for 10 minutes, and then we read our letters to each other for 10 minutes. And it's really awesome. Sometimes we just use generic questions. What was our question today? Do you remember? I can't even remember.
Oh, just what do I want to share with you about the situation in our office?
Okay.
And how does my answer make me feel? So it can be almost anything on a daily basis in your life, but always include the feeling because that's really the person.
Right. And then that, like you were saying, that gives us a chance to listen to what the other person is feeling inside, and it also gives us a chance to speak to each other, so each other can listen, and to listen so the other person can really speak and say what's inside of them. So that's really an awesome technique that we use.
Yeah, how important is listening, guys?
Number one.
Very important, isn't it? Yeah, don't you think? I always think that, too. I always say, well, Richard told me from the very start of our relationship, he said, he loved me, adored everything about me. There were two things that he would alter right away, and I was like, "What are those? I've never heard that before." I was like, "All ears. What are those?" He said, "Well, one, you're a little disrespectful of other people's time because you're late. You're often late, and two, I think if we're going to be together, you're going to have to turn into a world class listener." And I remember going, "Huh?" I went, "Huh? What's that?"
Right.
What's the world?
I thought
listener?
I was a good listener, and then I realized I listen so I can know what to say next, and that's not being a good listener.
That's right. And I was only 18 years old, so he was only 20, but he was far further along on the path than I was at that point. And
wow.
It was very powerful that he said that, because then of course I started to pay attention to what listening was, and that became, I had really this great guy. I wasn't going to lose him because I was late and because I was a bad listener.
Right. Well, and it's nice to know there's only two things, right?
That was pretty much then later in our married life, I heard that I leave my closet light on too many times, but
right, or the toothpaste cap off or whatever those
yeah,
other things
like
are.
It was kind of the small stuff, but it wasn't any deal breaker,
exactly.
Yes.
So I'm just I look around, and often I speak to moms in groups and things, and I look around, and I often think when I'm standing up there, I often think, dears, in my mind, if you only knew that how you treat your spouse today and how you treat your partner today is going to make the difference or not in your marriage in the next 5 years, because you look at these young couples, and they're sort of in that, 5 to 10 year range. They've got little kids. And they feel this sort of level of comfort that is probably not necessarily a good thing, because what happens, I think, when you stop paying attention to your relationship and you stop knowing that it's important to still court each other and still, just to make really special effort at stating appreciation and not taking each other for granted and things, when you don't know that, you can get a little complacent, and in that space of complacency, I think, is where a lot of couples have problems.
Oh, absolutely. We learned early on that all relationships, whether it's with us or with our kids or even in your spiritual life, are either growing or dying. There's no such thing as standing still. The minute
right.
you start standing still, you're really dying in that relationship. So it's something that we figured out. I mean, we even did a webinar called The Leading Cause of Divorce is a Good Marriage, because so many couples, work toward getting a good marriage, and once they feel like they've reached this plateau, they just kind of settle in and say, well, this is great. I love it the way it is. I hope it just stays here forever. And immediately it's deteriorating, and it's very insidious, because most couples don't even see it happening. They just, all of a sudden wake up one day and the secretary looks way different than she did the day before, and they don't even know what's, driving them, this wedge in their marriage, and it's so sad.
I wonder, just listening to the two of you and how cute you are together, and, isn't it just so important that throughout your marriage you just become more than anything the best of friends, and that you treat each other with that same respect, that same high level of respect that you would treat your friend, And it's like you never would talk to your friend with a negative connotation or with an ownership or an entitlement, And I think that that's another thing, that if I was to offer any advice, and I was wondering if you agree with that, that, you should be the best of friends in your marriage relationship.
Yes, That's what I just wanted to say, is I really want to bring it out because so many people say, you've got to work at your marriage, and I hate to hear people say that, or we're going to settle down and get married now, you know, and it all sounds so negative, you know, because really our relationship is about being happy and having fun together. And one of the things that helps so much, just two things, they're like praising each other. Like my number one love language is being affirmed, and I tell Eddie that all the time. I really love being affirmed, you know. And then also, he loves being thanked for things. His love language for me is doing things for me. Like he is the best vacuumer and dish loader and unloaderer there is in the world, and it's really important to me to not take that for granted and really thank him all the time. And then that's what makes our relationship fun and what keeps us happy. And that's, you know, I mean, we've had times when we weren't in the greatest relationship, but when we get back to these basics, that's what makes our life the best and the most fun it can be.
Well, and I think it's the commitment. You know, the word commitment is sort of maybe not taken as seriously as it should, you know, that it's the being committed to the marriage and to each other, but also to the partnership, the marriage, you know, that no matter these ups and downs that are just a natural ebb and flow, I mean, everyone has a natural ebb and flow in their day-to-day life, in their moods, and how they feel about today versus yesterday, and your marriage is no different. It's like a living entity, really. I mean, and you just to be able to like be graceful when you're, you know, in this space where, you know, it's maybe you're really busy, you know, maybe it's just where you are, but be graceful during that time, and really grateful when things are going really well, and also to be able to notice when things aren't. When you're not as connected, and practice some things. Tell us about some things that the two of you have practiced over the years to create those sparks between you again when you feel a little more disconnected.
Well, one of the things that you mentioned before, Ed and I do, we call it the I resent. And so we'll sit like down like you and Richard did and just really share what are the things that are bugging me right now.
That's,
you know,
great.
And that clearing of the air is so important.
That's great.
So I think that's one thing, Eddie. What other things would you say?
Well, we also meditate to listen to our inner selves, and that we virtually do every day, about 20 minutes. And, you know, there's so many things that come out of that besides just the physical relaxation, the physical beingness, but it just gives you an opportunity to realize where you're at. Like, you know, I'll sit there sometimes in meditation and say, you know, I feel like running away, like, you know, watching TV. Something's really going on in my relationship with Betty that I don't want to be with her. What's going on with that? And I wouldn't do that in real life. I mean, real life is just meeting people and go, 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 go. But in meditation, the opportunity comes up to see those things that would escape us otherwise. So I think everybody needs some still time, some time to really, you know, connect with their inner selves.
And it's funny because, you know, you talk about, well, I have children. I don't have time to do that. And Ed and I would find that we would be, like, when the kids were little, we were having to get up earlier and earlier and earlier to beat them waking up sometimes. And
that's what we did, too.
And, yeah, but, like, maybe we'd be at 4 o'clock in the morning, you know, meditating, and then we'd go back
to sleep.
But we had to make that a priority before the kids woke up.
I think one of the other things that we did to show the commitment we had to our couple relationship was that we actually got away for a directed retreat
or a seminar
at least once a year.
Yeah,
now,
that's
not
awesome.
A vacation weekend at a resort. That's fine too, but we know that for us anyway, to grow, we needed some outside stimulation mentorship challenge.
Yeah.
And so we would find things at Esalen or other places that looked like, okay, this is a great couples thing. Or some of them were even for singles. One that we just experienced was, what's her name at Esalen?
Byron Katie.
Oh, Byron Katie, yes.
Oh, you got to see, you got to hang out with Byron Katie at Esalen. How cool is that?
Yeah.
And
awesome. But we go as a couple to derive couple stimulation, stuff
right.
that we know we can use in our relationship. And you know,
and it's
that,
really fun, too, because we have another couple that goes with us all the time. And then it's good to have them for our accountability. They keep us on track after we've gone together, and we keep them on track afterwards. So that's funny
you say that. The man that I'm seeing, I tell him now, I say, well, if we end up together, we're going to be doing, we have to do a retreat at least once a year. I said the same
Excellent.
Thing.
Excellent.
Be a yoga retreat or some sort of couples kind of growth-oriented retreat. He's going to have to sign up for that.
That's right.
And, you know, we found other couples that we would encourage to do the same when we had all our little six kids, and they would watch our kids for a weekend, and we would watch theirs on another weekend. So there's no excuse. I mean, it's absolutely possible to put your relationship first. And it doesn't matter how big or small your kids are, you can make it happen if it's a priority for you in your life. And so we don't take people's excuses about this. It's too sacred. It's too important in our estimation, because we see, you know, the families falling apart around us all over the world, and it doesn't have to be that way. Our belief is that you can have a close, loving family and keep it that way. Here we are with our oldest daughter, 40 years old now, and four of our six children and two of their spouses all work in our business with us every
wow.
day. We
That's
we
awesome.
Love, they are part of our very best friends, and it's all stemmed from what we know we started when they were young. They see what it takes to have commitment and to make it work.
Well, you know, and I want you both to talk about the gift of belonging, because when we were doing our little kind of gathering in the beginning of this call before all of our listeners were on, we talked about how we both had a chapter called that in our books. And so I'd love to hear your take on the gift of belonging.
Well, what we really know is that we are the focal point for our children. They want our attention, and they'll get that attention from us in very positive ways or in very negative ways. And every time I say that, I think of one of our children whom we say taught us to be great parents, because she would test us negatively constantly. And now she's our greatest supporter as an adult. But it's so important to our children to belong to us, to know that we're giving them attention. And what we found is, especially one phrase that helped us so much, is that we need to catch our kids doing things right.
Nice.
And so many people think the opposite is true, you know, and I
that's
think that's
nice.
That's the way our parents raised us. They were always trying to catch us doing something wrong and correcting us. But we believe in catching our kids doing things right and praising them. And then what we've found is that keeps the belonging really high. We call it a belonging tank. That keeps their tank filled up so they don't have to maybe do some of those negative behaviors to get our attention.
That's beautiful.
We actually, in our book, Passionate Parent, Passionate Couple, have a chart in one area of the book. It's called the Belonging Chart, where you can see the behavior that a child has when they're at 100% belonging, the whole cooperation and how they're just flowing and everything is so wonderful. And then when they start losing that sense of belonging, they may drop down to 75%. Well, you as a parent start feeling a little bit annoyed or irritated by some of the things you see the kid do. And so that's what we would look for is, you know, why are we feeling annoyed and irritated? Aha, it's because Danny or Kelly or Tony or one of them isn't feeling that sense of belonging. And so very simple things like, Tony, you know, it was so great today the way you helped Chrissy find her shoes. Just a little compliment like that shows that we saw them, that we knew that they, you know, did something special, and that little quick acknowledgement could fill that belonging tank right back up so that they went right back into total cooperation. And it's not always that easy, but it's just a fun way to keep the sense of belonging for everyone in the family full, including ourselves.
That's awesome. Did you guys have family dinners as a priority in your household too?
Sometimes in reality that's pretty difficult with all the kids' activities, especially nowadays. But we dedicated Sunday to our family day.
That's what we did too.
Wow, that's awesome. Yeah, family days were totally sacred because we found, like, Ed would be taking appointments on Sunday, and then the kids would have, like, baseball games and blah, 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 and we were just getting splintered. So it started something that we all realized we had to do, and it was amazing because we have family meetings, and in the family meeting, we realized we all had to commit to this special day. And then Ed and I committed to, well, back in that day, it was $100 for Sunday. And we would do things that tourists do in Hawaii. And we would do those things. And it became so much fun. Everybody was totally committed. Somebody would invite somebody to do something with them on Sunday. And they're like, oh, no, we're having family day, you know. So
oh,
it was
nice.
We all enjoyed.
And even when they got older in their teens and started having boyfriends and girlfriends, the discussion came up about whether boyfriends or girlfriends would be invited, and the answer was absolutely no. You know, nobody got to come to our family meetings until they actually became fiancés.
Oh, boy.
And yes.
You can't belong to this club until you really belong.
Right.
Exactly.
And we just had a
special club
family meeting this past Sunday with the children that live here in Hawaii. So.
And some of the grandchildren were in on that one.
And the spouses, yep.
Oh, that's really sweet. That's so sweet. Well, I would like to ask you both what your greatest struggle of being a parent was and what your greatest joy of being a parent was. So you want to start first, Betty, what your greatest struggle was of being a mom, and then what your greatest joy?
I guess expectations can become a real struggle. Like I, you know, as a young child, played with my dolls and had this expectation of what being a mommy would be like, and it definitely wasn't what my mom was. And and I just, my mom worked outside her home and everything, and I really wanted to be home for our children. And then I just saw how demanding that was on me and how I wasn't perfect all the time and how I lost my temper and, you know, did things that I just really regretted so much. And so I think, you know, getting over the expectation that everything was going to be perfect, that's not a good expectation, but that we can continually strive to be the best that we can be. And it might not be our best, but at that moment it was the best way that we had of handling things. And like when we did start going to the parenting classes and began to know, you know, how to handle certain situations, and that was that gave us a lot of joy.
Oh, that's beautiful. And Ed?
I think for me it has to do with expectations as well to some extent. You know, I was kind of a drill sergeant, and I found myself parenting in a very authoritarian way in the beginning. And it was just a grind for me. It was like this constant battle of wills with the kids and myself. And I think that, again, attending parenting classes and realizing that the kids were not a direct reflection of me. They were not my responsibility in this area, but to realize that they were going to make mistakes, they're going to look good or bad on their own, whether I did anything right or not, and to, you know, separate, in a sense, myself from this whole, what do other people think or what will they think about me, was so huge and such a relief. And it was just like a giant burden coming off my back when I could just step back and watch our kids live their life, watch them, you know, do things with the consequence that they had to live with, and realize that it's just a journey, that they're on their journey and I'm on my journey. It was just so much more fun and such a joy to be connected to our kids with that viewpoint instead of trying to run their lives.
Yeah, I hear you on that. For sure, because you know it's like when you feel like your kids are your report card, you know, that they're a direct reflection of your success as a parent or your failure as a parent, that's a whole lot of pressure for you to put on yourself, and it's a whole lot of pressure for you to put on them too. Because the truth is, like you said, they're going to make plenty of mistakes just like you did. It's not personal to you, even though it might feel that way, but that's huge. And I know that our listeners, they will feel those same pressures if they don't already as their kids grow. And I hope that you're listening to this, because this can be a shortcut to a lot of pain and suffering for you all. Really can.
Absolutely.
And then a joy I'd like to share was just something that happened like a week ago with I'm watching our 4-year-old granddaughter right now while her mommy works in our business. And so I was with Jada, and we had just done something, and I said, "Oh, Jada, we are just best friends." And she said, "No, we're lovers."
Aw, that's just so cute. Aw.
My heart burst at that point with happiness.
Oh, my gosh, that is adorable.
Yes. Yep,
and Ed, what about your greatest joy?
I think it was just being able to actually have kids come to me. Because in the beginning, it was Betty who was the nurturer. Betty was the one that really knew what was going on in the family. And it was more that I was, the last to know kind of a thing. And when I first of all started learning to listen to feelings instead of words, it just changed the whole dynamic with our kids. Because they knew that I wasn't going to react. I was going to be able to really listen and respond instead of react. And it was so awesome when I got to experience kids coming to me, with an unplanned pregnancy and having me express joy at the thought of having a grandson, and saying that it was the best day of my life instead of being all upset. Things like that are just, I wish fathers could only get a little glimpse of the kind of joy it is to be able to have that as, you know, your legacy with your kids. It's just so awesome.
It's such a contribution to their lives to be able to support them in the tough times as well as the good times, you know, to be able to really hold space for them when they're going through difficult times, you know. That's beautiful, and I feel very much the same way.
Yeah, thank you.
So would you like to leave our listeners with anything, your last piece of wisdom, your last piece of anything? I'd just love for you to make sure that you've said everything you'd like to say today before we end our call.
Oh, thank you. I guess just getting back to the most important thing is to be passionate lovers with each other, that's the ground, the foundation for your children to know that it's possible. I think, like you're saying, nowadays it's just so hard for our children to believe that you can live happily ever after, and they see a lot of disappointment, a lot of disappointing marriages. I think even when they see the movies nowadays and see how people take love so flippantly, it's not love anymore. It's like infatuation, and then okay, now we've fallen out of love, so it's over. And I think that they get, it's not real. It's not real to have a committed love relationship for the rest of your life. And for us to be able to show them, yes, it is, and we can fall in love over and over and over again, and that's, really, the truth and the groundedness that we can give to our next generation.
That's beautiful.
I think for me, it's the concept of couple first parenting, and it's the adage of, putting on your own oxygen mask before you can help anyone else. I mean, everyone that's ever flown on an airplane has heard that so many times, and yet why doesn't that apply in our everyday life with our own family? And so it's so amazing that if you, look at the dynamics in the family and you say, we have way too much yelling going on around here. We really need to get more peace and harmony. And then you catch a kid fighting and you just start yelling, Tony, stop that. It's so ridiculous that you want peace and harmony, and yet you, as the grown-up and the married couple, can't make that real. Well, that's, the kids catch way more of what you do than anything you say. So you've got to make things real in your life. And so taking these opportunities of things that you want from your children in parenting and making them real between you as a couple first, so that you can say, yeah, we can calmly talk to each other without raising our voices. We can, work at our relationship in a way that we don't have to do that. And it flows out that we don't have to yell when we see a kid doing something. We can calmly walk up to them and say, okay, point out or time out or whatever the case might be, without getting that. So it makes it real. It's something that you know as the grown-up, as the adult, as the couple, that it can be done. And then it helps you get way clearer with what you want from your family.
Yeah, so, it's like you become the reflection of the behavior that you want to see, but you take the leadership role as the parents and the couple, and the marriage becomes the reflection of what you'd like your children to reflect back to you.
There it is. That's so, so direct and a beautiful way to put it. And that's what I was trying to say. Thank you so much.
You did a lovely job. You did a lovely job. You painted that picture for me, so that's the only reason I could say it. Oh, my gosh. Ed and Betty, it's been so wonderful talking with you. This is probably one of my most favorite topics, is to speak on love and relationship. And because, of course, you both know that I lost my beloved Richard, and we had just a really amazing marriage. And so I love to hear your stories. I love to hear your connection. It reminds me so much of our journey as a married couple. And, you serve and you hold that space of hope for people that, yes, your love can last a lifetime and beyond. And I just thank you so much for being on this call and for being in this series and holding that space in this series, because it's a blessed, blessed journey. And I'm just so happy to share you with our listeners as well.
Thank you so much.
I would like to say that it's so amazing for you to keep Richard alive the way you are doing, to keep, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff alive, because it's so important for people to hear all these messages. And he's still with you so much in what you are doing, and the way that you've kept this legacy going. That is so, so, so important. So we really thank you for that.
Oh, thank you. Yeah, I say that, you know, the happiness that I felt in my marriage with Richard is enough. It really is. It's enough. I not that I'm not going to have an amazing relationship again or whatever, but, you know, if I didn't, I would have had a very fulfilling half-life with a very wonderful man. So I thank you for acknowledging that, and I'm blessed to have such a strong purpose to carry on, because it's given me something, you know, massive to do, which in the beginning of my grief I really needed. So thank you.
So true.
And by the way, tell all your couples not to forget how to be young lovers all the time. In church 2 weeks ago, somebody came up after the Mass and said, "Are you guys recently married, newlyweds?" And we said, "No, we've been married 44 years." And
oh, that's wonderful.
Like, absolutely. I mean, why can't people hold hands? I saw this horrible survey that said something like 72% of people married more than 20 years don't hold hands anymore. And it's so sad. It is so sad. You have this person for such a short time on this earth. You've got to take advantage of every minute. So be real lovers. Remember what it's like and never grow old.
Oh, that's lovely. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining us this amazing hour. There's more to come as we continue to explore the art of happy parenting and being the best mom you can be with the greatest joy in our continued series, Don't Sweat the Small Stuff So You Can Live in Really Big Joy. You can find me at www.don'tsweatmoms.com or christinecarlson.com or don'tsweat.com. And remember to treasure the gifts of life and love. It's all unimaginably precious. Thank you, Ed and Betty.
Thank
you,
Christine.
You're welcome. Thank you.